In today's episode, I'm speaking to Katie Elliott, founder of HR Katie. And we're going to be talking a little bit about what it means to be a generalist in our conversation. Katie set up her own consultancy because she has got a real passion for working with startups and small businesses. She actually describes her career in HR as a series of happy accidents, which I absolutely love. Join us as we talk all things reward, motivation, and getting things right. Welcome, Katie, to Psychologically Speaking.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm exploring joy this season. You've been in HR, human resources, for over a decade. What drew you into that space? And then how did HR Katie come to life?
Well, so I'll be honest that I think my career and my path to HR, frankly, is kind of a bunch of happy accidents. I'm always quite intrigued when I hear of people being like, oh, I really want a career in HR, because I'm like, oh, okay. Because I was very lucky. I was presented with opportunities that I grasped with both hands. I started in recruitment, so I was doing a lot of meeting people, interviewing people. But I worked for a really small boutique recruitment agency. It wasn't super sales focused. I had really, really good relationships with lots of my clients. One of those clients then approached me and effectively poached me and said, do you want to come and do recruitment for me in-house? I said, yes, please. And it was not the most rigorous interview I've ever done. I started initially in an in-house recruitment role, but it very, very quickly became an HR role because it was a growing business. It was a small SME, but it was growing very, very quickly. Hence, they needed like someone to do all the recruitment. And because I was the person that was recruiting everyone, I knew everyone coming through the door. So they were kind of coming to me for pretty much everything once they were there. Because it was so small, it was me and the HR director, and that was it. So I was just straight at the coalface of, I did absolutely everything from the kind of the whole life cycle of HR, I suppose we call it. But I was bringing people on for recruitment. I was then onboarding them. And then I was helping them through their whole kind of journey as an employee, employee relations, which is sometimes positive, sometimes negative, but would also be, you know, supporting managers with things like appraisals, performance reviews, whatever you call those in your kind of business. And yeah, sometimes there's some difficult issues to deal with, some difficult people to deal with.
No, really?
Yeah, I know. I know. Crazy people, man. And and then also, you know, the other thing is the offboarding is a thing that sometimes is really overlooked in businesses, but is actually a really important part of that whole employee life cycle, because you don't really want people to leave with a bad taste in their mouth. You know, like obviously sometimes that is kind of inevitable, but it doesn't have to be. It was a real generalist. I got opportunities that I never would have got if I'd have been in a big corporate, you know, that's your lane, as it were. So they have a whole team for, say, employee relations. They have a whole team that works on recruitment. And these people are all completely siloed, completely locked away in a different office or a different floor. Whereas I've only ever sat out on the floor with people, been accessible, available, know the business, worked inside the business as well as alongside the business. And yeah, that's like totally my background. So then when the point came when I decided I didn't need to be working for someone else, I launched myself as working with like smaller businesses and startup businesses, because that's the world I know. I totally know what it's like when you're starting from scratch, those really tiny teams where everybody's doing a bit of everything. Those are the people I work with now, because speak their language. I'm a business owner myself. I am my own marketing department, my sales department. You know,
people laugh, don't they? But it's so true. You become, say, this, and I want to talk about this idea of generalism and specialism. Before I retrained as a psychologist, I was a business consultant. And similar to you, I decided very early on not to specialise, mostly because of the arenas I was working in. So I ended up getting wonderful opportunities and just hopping from industry to industry, doing lots of different roles within consultancy, which I just loved. It really suits me. It suits my interest and my energy. And then as a psychologist, pretty much the same thing happens. You know, you either go into clinical or you become a forensic. And I'm like, nah, I don't want to do any of that. I want to do my own thing. How important has that been for you?
Like I said, it's sort of a happy accident, really, because when I was looking to move out of the like purely recruitment role, I did go and interview for much more like siloed kind of in-house recruitment roles, or much more kind of junior positions that were in much bigger companies that would have probably led to somewhere completely different to where I am now. But I am who I am. I didn't, you know, fit in that well necessarily with some of those big corporates, and they probably sensed it as much as I did.
In what way?
You know, like, I always try and make a bit of a joke, or, you know, try and be a bit light-hearted, and I don't know, my whole approach is just a bit less serious, I suppose, than super corporate. But the funny thing is that, like, I've had clients that have come to me for that exact reason, because they've said to me, you know, well, I saw your website and then I found your Instagram and your LinkedIn, and you, like, you seem like a real human, and you're not just like hiding behind some kind of corporate HR, you know, desk front or whatever. So it's actually, you know, really part of, I suppose, my brand. And when you call your business your own name, you know, it's that kind of Ron Steele approach of like, it says on the tin, it's HR with Katie, you know, you get me.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to be working with someone who is a bit more approachable and hands-on, then you're probably not going to come to me as your HR consultant. If you want someone super formal, those people are
out. The thing that kind of comes through for me is how you really talk about, you know, experience of that whole life cycle. It's sitting with teams, being part of the teams, being part of that startup culture, and being in those small areas. And then what you're starting to explain there is really how that became, I suppose, a starting point for the culture in your own business. Did you think intentionally about what kind of culture? I mean, is it just you, or do you work with associates?
Just me.
In HR and in learning development, we talk about culture being so important.
Yeah.
And people might not think about culture if they are a solo owner business. Is it important? Have you ever thought about your culture with your own brand?
That is really interesting, because I suppose it's a bit of yes and no.
Mm.
I find myself quite lucky, I suppose, in a way, compared to a lot of other founders I know, that because of the nature of my business, I actually do get to go and see how other businesses work, and I work inside and with other businesses. So some of my clients that are on my kind of subscription plan, that's just an hour a month, and it's all virtual, and we just do Zoom calls or Teams calls or whatever, and, you know, I'm in touch with them and I'm supporting them, but I'm not physically there. Whereas I have other one-to-one clients that I go into their offices once a month, once a week, you know, I'm there in the office. And I had thought when I started the business that I only wanted to do the virtual stuff, that I only wanted to do the subscription, but it dawned on me, I think maybe last year, that I actually like the mix, because I get the thing of going into an office and talking to other people and talking to grown-ups. And, you know, that's the thing that I hear a lot from female founders, that they do get lonely and they do sometimes feel quite isolated. I have a great support network of other female founders that I know. But because I get to go in and see other people, and I kind of feed off the cultures of the businesses I'm working with as well, I do think it helps me to have a slightly different perspective maybe to other like completely solo founders. I'm not sure if that really answered your question. But
I think it does.
Is a bit of a mix, basically. And then I suppose the other thing is, yes, is some of the days that you get as a founder are quite fun. You know, when you're at a networking event and you meet people that you really like or get on with and you're chatting to, and you kind of almost feel guilty about, like, should I be sat at my desk slaving away? And then you're like, no, because it's okay to be enjoying work and networking and people. Because, you know, hey, spoiler alert, generally I do quite like people. So I think it's that's something that you have to kind of be a little bit aware of, that there are some huge advantages to the solo founder thing. But yeah, it really does come with some downsides of, I mean, not talking about like the money and the income and like, where's my next paycheck coming from? Because that's obviously a different thing. But I'm talking about more the, like you said, the psychological thing of like, how do I feel? You know, how fulfilled am I? And, you know, is this the right balance for me? Because at the moment, I can't say anything other than, yes, I absolutely love the balance that I have currently. And I feel, I can't lie again, that I feel lucky. And I sort of suppose I shouldn't feel lucky for having a great balance. But I do. I feel so grateful that I really enjoy the work I'm doing when I am working. But I also, you know, have built this so that I am able to have drop-offs, pickups from school, you know, time with my kids that isn't asking for somebody else to give me that time, as it were.
I think what you're talking about there is kind of what we call these positive psychology principles. So you give yourself recognition.
Yeah.
You know, you're giving yourself autonomy and your work gives you a huge amount of meaning. So that recognition, autonomy and meaning are these core principles of positive psychology movement. And that's had such a massive sweeping impact across organisations and cultures.
Yeah.
I suppose, where have you seen that show up with the types of businesses that you work with? What do people get really right when they start to look at those things?
I mean, I think it sounds almost trite, but when people are recognised, and it doesn't even necessarily have to be rewarded, but it's that recognition and reward piece is so important for just even a pat on the back or a well done, an all hands meeting, or that boost that you're able to give people when it is a regular part of, like, this person has done great. We've won this contract because of this person. When you really shout out about, thank you, that's fantastic work, like, that goes so far in really building such positive relationships, positive atmosphere. And I totally have seen that be a really fantastic thing. You know, the flip side of it is that, you know, I haven't always worked for myself. So I have worked at other businesses. And, you know, I did, one of my old bosses, I remember saying to me once, well, the fish smells from the head. And I'd be like, okay. But she's right in that, you know, yes. if it's very tense and very awkward and, you know, the leaders are keeping all the cards close to their chest and you never know what's going on and you never know how the business is doing, that is all anyone ever talks about, of like, the communication's terrible, you know, the whole atmosphere is just totally different. So it really does make a huge difference when the leaders are vocal about, you know, who's done well, who's helped, and those kind of things. Like I said, you know, people think, oh, it's, you know, you shouldn't get so excited about someone saying well done, but my word, it makes such a difference.
So talk to me then about when you're a party of one, like we are, you know, your own marketing. Yeah, party of one. Sticking with the joy theme there, how do we give ourselves a well done, or how do we bring well done's into our work environment? What advice have you got for us there?
Well, sometimes you will get a well done from someone and you didn't ask for it. And those are like, amazing. So, you know, when you get an email from a client or a customer or someone you're working with, that they're like, thank you so much for your help, that's really made a huge difference, like, keep those, keep a little email folder or a little Google Docs drive, and when you're feeling a bit flat or a bit down, you know, go back and be like, no, I helped, I made a difference. Those are quite helpful. The other thing that someone said to me as well, and actually I've started doing more, but I'm not as brilliant at, is actually asking for feedback more, asking for Google reviews. And again, when you're working with other small businesses, if you say to them, you know how much that matters to get good Google reviews, I'd really love it if you know, if you would really show your appreciation, if you really want to show your appreciation, please feel free to leave me a Google review. And again, some of the stuff that comes back off those, you know, not everyone does it, but when they do and they say something really nice or something very specific about how you helped them, again, I think those are a lovely boost to have mentally, but also, you know, they can be really good for your business too. So that's a sort of a double winner, as it were. And then I suppose it is that thing of, you know, you are allowed to have fun in your business sometimes.
Yeah. I find this such a curious space. So my psychology research started with imposter phenomenon.
Yes.
And the recent research I've been doing with your sister on Good Girl Economics, we've been exploring how women feel about other women, for example, in business spaces. And I find it, you know, equally shocking and intriguing that we find it hard to tell another woman, well done. And that can show up in a multitude of spaces. And so one of the things I would think is that it's really cool when another person tells you, well done. We all know how that feels. We all know, like you said, it makes you feel wonderful when someone says, well done, especially if they're in that single or that founder space where they haven't got a team to be able to turn to and say, was that okay? Or actually give me feedback. I'm ready for this and I'm ready to grow. What's your kind of take on that?
No, I mean, I think it's really important. I had a client that I was working with recently and they had to deal with this really difficult situation. And I ended up emailing her just separately from all the kind of group, you know, formal emails, and just sort of said to her, well done. I know I can't imagine how horrible that conversation would have been, but well done for getting it done, and just, you know, enjoy your weekend and don't think about it again. And, you know, she messaged me back because she was just like, I'm so touched that you know, thought to do that.
Yeah.
And then she told her boss and said to me, thank you so much for saying thank you to her. And, you know, so it's just one of those things of like, I get it, because no one is ever going to say, well done for firing someone, because it's a horrible thing to have to do. But I am also a human. That is the human part of the H in HR. And I know that I hate having those conversations. I've never liked having those conversations. There are some people, weird people in HR, that love those like big confrontations. I have never been that person, but it's something that I've always had to sort of grit my teeth and get on with, just, you know, as part of the role. But yeah, if, you know, if you've got someone that's like, well done, that was horrible, but you got through it, that really is a great thing to have. And I've had it in the past, which is why I sort of did it for her. I've had it when line managers have said to me, like, thank you so much for holding my hand through that, like I couldn't have done it on my own, etc., etc. So I think it's just a really important thing, that recognition piece. And yeah, you can definitely do it for people off the cuff, or, you know, even things like on social media, you can reshare someone's reel and be like, I've seen this, I think this is brilliant. You know, I did it yesterday. My accountant, she has a take your children to work day, and they have a day in the year where...
Amazing.
Yeah. Everyone who's a parent in her organization, you know, they do all these like tax games and like, you know, hunt the bear and all of this kind of stuff.
I reshared that
because I was like, that's such a fantastic initiative. Yeah. And to be so vocal and open to working with parents, you know, it's so important. Mm. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that, like, it doesn't have to be a massive, you don't have to like make a big song and dance about it. But if you just say, comment on someone's reel, reshare it, I think this is brilliant, what a good idea. You know, it's just those little boosts that just kind of help everybody feel like we're all kind of pulling in the same direction. hopefully.
They have a real ripple effect, don't they? And just to go back to something you talked about this earlier, you know, I like to show up as me and I like to have a laugh. And we hear the phrase, you know, bring your whole self to work. And I've seen that in corporate spaces, you know, where people use it as a measure, a HR measure. Do you feel you can bring your whole self to work? And usually we'd be asking that question corporately if we wanted to understand, do people feel that their differences are recognised, their differences are supported? We're not just in a place of accommodating, we're in a place of celebrating. What do you think about bringing your whole self to work, and how does that look like for the people you're working with?
Yeah, that's interesting, because again, I've only ever really worked with people where they more or less do bring their whole selves to work, sometimes too much. I'm like, oh, back paddle. Sometimes I get myself into trouble because I just say the Friends quote that's in my head, and then I'm like, I shouldn't have said that out loud because no one knows what I'm talking about. And I have a very strongly held belief that there is a Friends quote for every occasion. So bringing your whole self to work, sorry. I do try and bring my whole self to work. I think most of us in kind of small business space do. Building boundaries sometimes is harder. When you think about how much you share about your life and, you know, your personal circumstances. As you're probably aware, I have been open that my personal circumstances have changed quite dramatically in the past year. My husband and I have separated and I'm now co-parenting, which has been a huge shift that I was not expecting and, you know, has been really, really difficult. And I did keep it quiet for a long, long time when things were not great. But I got to the point where I was like, I just can't not talk about it anymore because it's who I am now, you know, and I don't have my children with me all the time anymore. So that massive pull of the having to be at the school gates for 3 o'clock, I don't actually have 2 days a week now. And it used to be 100% me, you know, and now it's only 50% me. So it's a massive shift in my personal circumstances, how I can manage my work and all of that. So I felt myself that I couldn't not talk about that. Obviously, I don't go into like huge amounts of detail about it. But as I said, I don't pretend that.
Must have been quite a big moment, I imagine, because I mean, even talking to you today, you obviously want to be careful what you're saying, but you're fairly open, as most people are. We want to self-censor slightly. You've got your own family's confidentiality and privacy to think about, but there's this humanness, this authenticity that comes across and shines off you. So there must have been a real moment where you sat there and thought, how do I do this? How do I be authentic without oversharing? What does oversharing look like for me? And that must be something that many business owners go through, from because none of us have this, like, you know, picture perfect world where our private lives remain really stable and calm whilst we're launching businesses. All sorts of stuff happens in the background.
No, exactly. Like, it's none of it's picture perfect. And I'm fully, fully aware of that. But, you know, it is in a way, it's very easy to hide because people think, I know so much about you. And you know what? I let you know about me. There's no blueprint for like how much or how little to share and like how you go about it. You know, I decided to talk about the fact that I do have two girls, but I don't use their names. I don't show their faces on my social media.
That was such a really interesting like kind of slip there.
Yes, social I know. Media. That's what I thought.
Social media. I think you started a thing.
We need the recognition.
Does it need us or do we need it? That's the question.
My addiction to my phone is a whole other podcast that we probably should not get into right now.
I can talk to you about addiction and smartphones. We're probably not addicted to our smartphones. When we do addiction scales in psychology, there's an addiction scale for alcohol, there's an addiction scale for drugs. Now, some researchers actually did this. They took those addiction scales and they rephrased those, one for smartphones and for friends. And guess what happens? We're addicted to our friends. Because when you change the scale that is meant to measure one thing to measure another, you can never be quite sure what's the underlying construct. But also, we're inherently social people. So, of course, we're addicted to our friends. So I would say, actually, move past the proxy, the device, and think, what is it within the device? What is it on that device? And smartphones are a classic example of when you go onto your smartphone, it is literally a mini universe. There is so much in there. So yes, if you're heading to Facebook every 2 minutes and you can't live without Facebook, then actually you can't live without the updates for certain people or certain things or certain comments. And I would just take that step further before going, yes, addicted to social. And I think we see a lot in terms of social media's bad, smartphones bad, and yes, there are some really dire consequences, but we're probably not addicted to our phones. That's the wrong word, I think.
Okay. But that again is really interesting, because going back to obviously talking about joy, you talk about what brings you joy. You know, I can quite honestly say that the most joy I have in my life, other than my children, obviously, like those in the last
If they're listening, you are like, the joy of our lives.
Guys, I love you. You're the joy. But yeah, it's my friends. I love my friends. You know, my oldest friends, my closest friends are the people that I went to senior school with. They're still my friends 30-ish plus years later.
That's so lovely.
Yeah. You know, I have a bunch of friends of like the school mums. So people I've only met because our children are friends and then we've become friends. I have a bunch of friends that I go to the gym with 3 times a week. I'm not saying I'm like, you know, the most sociable person in the world, but as it turns out, I do make quite a lot of friends and I love them. And I was realizing when I was reading something or watching something about the opposite, what is it called when you're an introvert?
Yeah.
And I was like, I didn't necessarily call myself an extrovert. Like, I suppose in a sort of maybe slightly piss-takey way of like, look at you, like looking for attention all the time. But actually, when I was sort of looking at what extrovert means, it means that you get joy and energy and kind of life from being around people. I do enjoy having the odd weekend to myself these days. But I also am aware that, you know, prime example, kind of the last Friday of the summer holidays, I met up with my school friends and all their kids and all our kids together. And we all said, you know, we'd all had the same conversation in the car on the way there of like, yes, you guys are all going to play together and have a play date. But let's be honest, this is really for your mum. I am going to see my friends. I really want to see my friends.
Mm.
I don't want to be dealing with any fights or issues or anything other than having a really nice time with my friends. So can we all agree we're going to just have a really nice day? And they were like, yes, mum, sure, mum. Okay, great. Thanks so much. And it was a really joyous day and we all had a wonderful time.
I love that. I lived in Manchester for 10 odd years when I went to uni. And I actually moved back to where I grew up. So we all scattered. And even my university friends, I've got some really strong friendship with people I've worked with. So one of my best mates who I do lots of running with, I met in a workplace when I was only there for 9 months, I was on a fixed term contract. And then the other group of mums who were so special to me are the little group, well, it's a little group of mums we all met when we were pregnant.
Mm.
And so it's like an NCT group and we're still friends, but we probably only meet once or twice a year. It's so interesting, isn't it, how communities and friendships kind of converge. Quick reminder about my Psych Insight service. It's a fast turnaround, tailored insight report for freelancers, founders, and thoughtful doers who want evidence-backed answers to real business questions. One client called it psychology with a mirror and a map. It's honestly one of the best ways to work with me one-to-one. Head to www.leelaange.co.uk/insight for more details. Whether it's dealing with a micromanaging client or bringing the latest ADHD research into your coaching, I'll give you not just answers, but fresh ways to reframe the challenge. You can buy a done-for-you report or add on a coaching session if you'd like to go deep. You said something really interesting earlier about people think they know us because they see us online. And that whole parasocial relationship as a psychologist is just intriguing. In smaller businesses, you do tend to know your colleagues really well. In more corporate spaces, I've struggled with not knowing people deeply. And possibly a bit like you, I I suppose that she's what drives the work I want to do, is like just inherently being quite interested. I don't think anyone becomes a psychologist because they're not there. You have to be nosy.
I say that about HR. I'm like, is it that I care, or is it that I'm just nosy and I want to know what's going on?
I want to know what's going on. Why is that?
I know everything. I'm one of those. And then when I don't, I'm furious. And I'm like, I'm very angry as an HR person. I'm like, actually, I'm just angry because I wanted to know.
So I'm interested then. Tell me about this week for you. What has brought you joy this week? Has it been a work moment, a personal moment?
This week, my joy has been a personal moment, to be honest, because, yeah, my eldest started senior school yesterday. Wow. As we're recording this. Very big day. Very big day. We were walking her into school just down the road. Obviously, it's yes. Very different senior school. Like, parents are so hands off. And so we met one of her best mates at the gate. They kind of went in together, but she'd been so like, oh, my tummy hurts. And I was like, yeah, you're nervous. It's fine. Bye. And I, you know, obviously was like, how's she going to be? What's it going to be like? It's so different. You know, she's got one friend in a that she knows from her primary school going into her class in senior school. Like, so there's these, you know, 20 plus other kids that she's, you know, doesn't know at all. But she came out absolutely full of beans last night, and, you know, she just talked nonstop about what she'd been doing all day, which, again, let me tell you, for an 11-year-old, is like joy on its own, because it's usually blood out of stone.
They don't give a lot away, do they? I have moments, and I have to say, I have moments now where I've cracked it that if I'm in the car and my child's next to me in the car and we're driving somewhere, I'm going to get the most amount of information out of them. As soon as we open the car doors, get into the house, it's like silence. But I'm so pleased that she's had a good first day.
Yes, really good news for all of us. Like, just, you know, because it's been such a big year for them in terms of like me and their dad, and their kind of whole living situation's been really different. And yeah, it's such a big deal, like changing schools and, you know, having to completely find this new rhythm and this new routine. But anyway, I know it's only day one, but it was as good as it could have gone day one, I think. So,
well done.
Yeah, I think that was. And then she lost a tooth. When she got home, she had a tooth that came out, and she was like, oh, well, I'm really pleased about that because it was really hurting today. And I'm like, that's a doubly good day.
Let's imagine for a moment that workplaces did onboarding the same way that schools do onboarding for going up to senior school. What would work well and what wouldn't work well? So they have these like massive, so I've got this coming in October. So there's about five schools near us, but we can go and see all of these schools. So there's like these, you get to go and shop. Imagine as an employee, if you managed, if everywhere had big open days and you could just go wander around and have preferences, wouldn't that change recruitment? I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
That's so interesting. Yeah, I mean, actually, it's something I've talked about in terms of, you know, recruitment is a two-way process. Remember that as someone recruiting. I'm sort of obviously more talking to the employers than the employees. But like, you know, it is a two-way conversation. Yes, they have to impress you, but they have to want to work for you as well. You know, it's I think of recruitment as the sort of the happy show side of HR, because it's like, yeah, we're great, come and work for us, and they're like, yeah, I'm brilliant, hire me, and everyone's like having a great time.
One of my favorite jobs, this is, I'm going back some now, but I was actually doing recruitment and training with Bolton Council. We had like this customer services contact center, and it was in the town hall, and every year we'd run a big recruitment event on a Saturday. I used to really enjoy it because you get everybody coming in on a Saturday so they could get to come in and have a good old look round, and we got to sit them in our breakout area and they could see where we got the free teas and coffees, and then we'd get them doing exercises and practice calls. And I always used to just love the idea that people were coming, and you could definitely tell people who walked through the door and were like, oh my God, this is not for me. And then there were definitely people who were like, I really want to work. And you could just tell that. And it made makes that recruitment easy because you're going beyond words of people, like you saying, can you tell me about a time when you did this and that and the other? And people are going to go, yes, here's a time. And it's very kind of orchestrated. Yeah. Whereas we were, I don't know, it's the only place I've worked where I felt like recruitment was really natural. And we got amazing people. We got amazing people.
Yeah, that I mean, that's a really good point. I mean, I do also think onboarding can be hugely overlooked and shouldn't be. Because I've done exit interviews with people like 2-3 years after when they're leaving, and in their exit interview they tell me about how terrible their onboarding was.
Really? First impressions. Like,
exactly. It's not just about recruitment. It's that day you walk through the door, because if you walk through the door and it's like, oh, we haven't got your laptop ready, and oh, we don't know where you're sitting, and oh, your manager's on holiday for the next 2 weeks, so you're just going to have to find everything. Not great.
There's a real psychological reason why that happens as well. So we have these, you know, we're kind of preconditioned to remember the starts and endings of things. They use this research to help with pain management. So when you've got somebody who is in pain, if you administer pain management right up to the end of their appointment and keep them pain free for that last bit, even if the main appointment was painful, it's the last bit they remember more. So if you get pain management right, people can leave a situation, and this could happen for customer services or recruitment or anything.
Yeah.
Something can be difficult, it can be challenging, but if you those last final moments are better, then that's what people are going to remember rather than sticky middle. And it's the same with beginnings. We remember beginnings because they're given more prominence in our brains. So, yeah, I think those onboarding and offboarding conversations, they are important, really important.
Yeah, and they are, unfortunately, often overlooked. But I really can't sort of emphasise to people how important they are, because exactly as you said, it's that first impression of like being in the business. So if your first impression is that everything's a mess and nobody knows what they're doing, and that's sort of, you feel psychologically unsafe, don't you? Like that's that whole hierarchy of needs thing of like, if you feel safe, if someone is like guiding you, showing you, helping you, supporting you from the very off, that gives you that impression of like, there is a safe place for me here. There is a safe space. There is someone I can go to. There are needs being met. And yeah, it's something I really advocate for with businesses of all sizes, because I'm not saying it's just the founders that do it or don't do it, but it's businesses of all sizes, you know, really need to just make sure that it's something that gets kind of baked in.
It says something, doesn't it, about culture? It kind of says we're a place where we look after people, where you can be looked after, but where we expect you to look after other people too. Because I think when people demonstrate behaviour, then you're then saying, well, that's how we do things around here. And you know that that's what's expected of you as well.
Totally. I mean,
I'm a serial on-boarder and off-boarder because I've done lots of contracting work. And I feel like I've become quite good at leaving by trying to have really high energy at the end of contracts so that it doesn't feel flat, because it can feel flat for the employee leaving. And I think having high energy to the end and staying motivated is difficult for anybody. If you think about finishing a piece of work or finishing your speech, just look at children at the end of school year. I mean, you know, we're all dragging ourselves to the school gates in that last week in July. Yeah. And then you look at the energy in September. It is so, well, for the majority, there are obviously children who, for school and parents as well, who don't have that experience. There's something to be said about the fact that if we can, you know, think about those endpoints as being so important in our minds. They're the moments we'll go back to. So the last place I worked, I took a picture on the last day of me in a footwell next to a picture that I've looked at every single day that I've been in that office. And I just posted it the next day. And it's like, right, that was it. That was my final day. But I've got a big smile on my face. And actually, that is one image I will associate with that place, which is good, because actually, something did happen, which could have been quite negative, but that's what I'm choosing to take with me. These starting and endings can be really important. Are there any kind of go-to books and mantras or quotes that you tend to lean on?
I'm going to have to be really honest that I am dreadful at reading business books. So
I love that.
No.
I love that honesty. I'm always fascinated by people who read every single book that comes out. I read a lot of psychology papers.
Sure. I read a lot of news and articles, agreed. But no, I'm not great at reading business stuff. So I have a stack of books that I'm supposed to read.
Maybe we'll stick with the there's a friend's quote for that. So if there was one policy or ritual you'd make mandatory for every business that you work with currently, if you could mandate it tomorrow, you could say, so right, you know, you're part of the HR hub and this is one thing that I know is going to make the world a better place, it's going to bring you sales and performance galore, happy people, happy HR, here's what you should do, what's your one tip?
I think it's that that celebrating the wins, you know, saying well done, saying thank you, making everybody feel good about what they're contributing.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the thing that's really hard for people, is when they just feel like it's all for nothing. They're just on a treadmill, you know, they're just a cog in a machine. When you feel that you're actually making a difference and that you're contributing, that really helps people feel engaged and motivated. And then the more engaged and motivated they are, the more likely they are to bring in more business and be a good advocate for that business and, you know, show up and say good things. So I think it's really important, that recognition piece. And it just, it's not trite. It's not silly. It's really, really important because, you know, AI's coming, sure. But at the moment, you know, we're not all robots. And we do like to be told, well done.
I think we do. I think that's spot on. And I like the fact that, yes, I have to be in my own marketing department and I can outsource my finance, but I can also outsource my HR for an hour a month. I love the idea of that, you know.
Yeah, and that's
how it works for you.
That is how it works for me. And, you know, I've started outsourcing my, like, Canva. I don't make all my Canva images and stuff anymore. I have a VA that pulls all of the images together now and schedules it all out on my social media for me, because that used to take me days out of my month, really? The amount of time. So now I just, you know, I write the content, I write the captions, and then I just say to her, right, you know, this is my monthly plan, and she pulls it all together. It takes her half a day and it costs me, you know, what it costs me, but that's money that I can be, or time I should say, that I can be spending that's much more valuable for my time. And that's what I say to business owners as well. I'm like, you know, why should you spend 4 hours Googling how do I do this? I'm not saying that what I'm telling people and what I'm helping people with doesn't exist in the internet. Of course it does.
But there's always nuance, isn't there? And I think it's a bit like I said with research and smartphones, you know, yes, if you use an addiction scale, it will show you that you're addicted to your friends and your smartphone. And it must be the same with HR. Yes, if you Google, it's going to give you this answer and that answer, but I can give you the nuance behind it.
Exactly. And I think that's the difference of me working with small businesses because, you know, again, don't get me wrong, there are these big corporate companies where you can kind of get this kind of support, but they will only ever give you the party line, as it were, you know, that this is the ACAS code, this is the formal way to do it. Whereas because I have spent my whole career working in small business, as I say, this is how we're going to make this work. This is how we're going to work with this person to resolve this issue.
There's different risk appetites, isn't there, completely?
Totally.
I feel.
That risk is a really interesting one, actually, because I had a conversation with a director I worked with in a business a while ago. And he said to me, you know, risk is a calculation. You know, it's how bad it could be, but it's multiplied by the likelihood. And it's the likelihood that you've got to think about. Because if the likelihood is really, really low, then the risk factor is not as bad. When people get lose perspective is when they're like, this is how bad it can be. And then they forget the risk factor.
Yeah.
bit, like the likelihood bit of the risk factor, and that's when people kind of lose all perspective. And that's hopefully that's the what bit, I can help with.
That's the bit with HR, isn't it, where people, I think, become robotic rather than bring in the human. And you talked about employee relations. I think where employee relations break down is, yes, there's a risk that this person might do this. And if that happens, then the impact will be really, really bad. The likelihood of them doing that is significantly reduced if you just sit and have a conversation face to face rather than sending an email. And I've had that happen to me recently where I've had somebody send me two emails. They've not picked up the phone. They've just sent two emails. And so the likelihood of me making that complaint has gone high. I've made the complaint. Whereas the likelihood of me making a complaint was very low had they just picked up the phone in the first place. So there's that thing where I think we just misjudge the interaction piece. And that's always what I've taken from HR professionals who do the job really well, is that they remind you that we are humans talking to humans.
Exactly. And that is my number one piece of advice for people most of the time, is let's try and deal with this informally if we can. Because as soon as you go formal, it's time, it's effort, it's process, it's hard and draining. And as you said, emotionally, people are much more fraught, much more tense. Whereas if you sit down and have one potentially slightly awkward conversation, but deal with it, usually, like I said, the risk factor is much lower because you've dealt with the issue.
And psychologically, you know, we go back to that research which talks about the beginnings, the endings, the sticky bits. We know that you can still bring joy to a really awkward situation. You can still redeem something. We know this from customer shopping, you know, experiences. People can have a service failure and still be delighted at the end. And I think nowhere is that truer than something like a HR service that works really well to kind of guide you through the sticky bit and go, yeah, this bit, hang on. You know, get ready. It's going to be a bit tough for a few weeks, but here's where we're aiming for at the end, which is everyone will be happy.
Happier, exactly. It's like, this is the thing. It doesn't always lead to pure joy. Let's be honest.
Sometimes people just need to leave an organisation.
Sometimes people need to be reprimanded. That is the happy outcome because you've lost that toxic influence.
Yeah.
And again, I hate to say it, but yes, I have worked with businesses that I've helped them exit someone from the organization. And then when you follow up and they're like, everyone's so much happier because that toxic like body has now kind of exited. So
I feel like there's a whole other podcast we could do on the impact of individuals and toxicity, what actually creates that and why people aren't inherently toxic, but how a certain set of circumstances will convene to bring about this melting pot of why one person can be triggered so much where it becomes such a toxic. Maybe we'll talk about that another time.
Probably, yeah. I could do a 3-hour monologue.
Let's schedule that one in for next year. See. It has been a joy to have you on. It's been lovely to get to know you. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Psychologically Speaking with me, Leela Ainge. Just a reminder, if you have time, go and like and review the podcast because it really makes a difference to independent podcasters like me. Did you know I have a newsletter and you can hear from me regularly and get tips on coaching, the latest research and other things that come into my head on a regular basis. If you're interested, head to my website www.leelaainge.co.uk where you can sign up. That's all for now.